Koreans, man and women have longed to peer behind the veil separating our world with the one beyond, spirit and place of premonitions and glimpses into the secret workings of the universe. In a moment, you're going to meet Clint Marsh with us. His latest work, Swami Panchadashi's Clairvoyance and Occult Powers. Get ready on Coast to Coast AM. Clint Marsh is the editor of Swami Panchadashi's Clairvoyance and Occult Powers, a new edition of the lost classic of mental development. He's a graduate of the University of Iowa School of Journalism and a publisher of what he calls Practical Esoterica for nearly 20 years. And he has made it his life's work to help people apply magical teachings to everyday life. We're going to talk about psychic powers, mentalism, clairvoyance, the occult tonight on Coast to Coast with Clint Marsh. Clint, welcome to the program. Good to have you with us.
Hi, George. Thank you. I'm so glad to be here. Good morning.
So you raised in Iowa, not too far from me in Missouri, and I just love the Midwest, don't you?
I do. I don't miss it in the winter, but I do have roots in Missouri myself, and I grew up in Iowa. It was a good place to grow up. I'm in California now. Just seemed to be, unfortunately, more opportunities out here at the time when I was all grown, but I had a great childhood, and in fact, my childhood, early childhood in Iowa, was where I first learned about clairvoyance, occult powers, all these psychic and magic things that you and I are so intrigued with.
Oh, I love Los Angeles out there quite a bit, and I've got to tell you, they had the worst winter this year than I can remember in the 8 years I've been out there. just cold and wet. It wasn't like the typical LA weather. Things are changing.
Yeah, you have to tell the people back home that it does get bad out here sometimes. They just think we're sitting in the sun all the time.
Basking away. They do. Hey, tell me, your work with the Swami, who he was around a long, long time ago. How did you get involved in researching him?
Well, it was really kind of by chance this last time around with the Swami. It would have been around 1999. I was researching different topics in astral projection and psychic abilities and so forth, because I wanted to put together a collection of works that would help me understand all this unexplained phenomenon. And I went to a great bookshop in San Francisco called The Psychic Eye, and it's unfortunately no longer with us. But when I was there, I was combing the shelves, and I found these great little booklets by Swami Panchadashi. And I bought those, and I took them home, and I started reading them. And there really was a lot in there, too. And I filed them away. And in the meantime, I published a book called The Mentalist Handbook. I wrote that, and it was published by Red Real Wiser. And then a few years after that came out, they said, "Hey, Clint, come in. We want to talk to you about the next book and what your ideas are, what our ideas are." We sat down for the meeting, and they just slid across the counter this name, Swami Panchadashi. And I said, "That sounds familiar." And it just took me a minute to figure out, he's back in my life. He's returned. So even though Swami's been dead for so many years, this book first came out in 1916, he's still here, and he's just as relevant today.
And a fellow you've also researched who did a lot of the writings of these books, William Walker Atkinson, right?
Right. Now, William Walker Atkinson, you might hear that name and say, well, that's pretty pedestrian name compared to Swami Panchadashi, but I find that it took me about 2 minutes to figure out that William Walker Atkinson is actually much more interesting himself. This was a man who grew up in Baltimore, Maryland, and he was the son of a grocer, and as he was growing up, he just thought, well, I'll go into this line of work, grocer, as well, and so he did that, and he was dissatisfied with that, turned to business and then to law, got married in his 20s, and then almost immediately, I don't think it had anything to do with the marriage, but he had a nervous breakdown. And
maybe it did.
Well, that's another conversation, I'm sure. But he had this nervous breakdown, and the doctors couldn't treat him, and he couldn't find any help anywhere until he found something that was called mental science. And this would have been around the 1880s, late 1880s, and he found mental science, which the general thought was your mind is the most powerful thing in the world. You know, mountain or industry or other man is going to be greater than your own mind. And so he took this to heart, and he really worked at discovering the secrets of this mm-hmm. mental science, and it turned his life around, so much so that he went to Chicago, where he met a man named Baba Bharata. And that's his first encounter with one of these Far East mystics that was new in the United States. So there was a time, at that time, the 1893 World's Columbian Expo in Chicago, where they met. Indian influence and Eastern influence was coming to the United States in a great way. And we take for granted Indian food and Indian culture, yoga, yeah. all these things. It's all around us today, but it's quite new at the time. And so when he met Baba Bharata, the two of them decided, well, we should collaborate because we both believe in mental science. And so they decided that they would collaborate. And they did. It took them about 10 years, but finally Atkinson became a publisher and a writer himself on mental science. He moved from Baltimore with his family to Chicago. And he and Yogi Ramacharaka, or he and Baba Bharata, started putting out works by the Baba's teacher, Yogi Ramacharaka. And I was reading along in this history, and I thought, well, this is great. You know, someone finds what they really are looking for, and they find some compatriots and so forth. And it was at that point in my research that I realized, oh, no, not only was Yogi Ramacharaka, he had passed away, wasn't in the room with William Walker Atkinson, but neither was Baba Bharata. In fact, all of these mystics, including the Swami, Panchadasi, who had come to be, were made up out of pure ether, you might say. That's how I'd say in my mentalist handbook. Huh. And so he was all alone putting out all these works. And he wrote and was a bestseller in his own right, and then also under these pseudonyms.
The Swami wrote a lot about auras, didn't he?
He has an entire booklet on auras, and that's covered a little bit in the Clairvoyance and Occult Powers, too. That's something that everything has. It's this spiritual body that you can't see, but you can be trained to see auras. And it's what I love about the Swami's writing, because I guess we could call it the Swami's book, is just how common sense everything is and how everything starts with a real physical basis. And so if you're going to learn how to see auras, according to the Swami's technique, you really just have to relax. That's something that's kind of impossible to do anymore. But you just relax your eyes, you relax your mind, and believe it or not, he says, just squint a little bit. And you do, and you start to see this fuzzy line around things. And I read that. Yeah, I read that when I was editing this book, and I thought, well, come on, there's got to be something more to it than this. But, yeah, it's a good start. And I think that if we can relax our minds and the rest of ourselves, then maybe we can really learn more about these things. We're just not so standoffish.
Clint, was the Swami a believer that all of us possess the ability for clairvoyance and other powers?
Oh, most definitely. Yeah. The idea in his book is that we don't have just five senses. You know, we're raised to think, well, we've got vision and hearing and touch and taste and smell, but he introduced this idea that every person has got a sixth sense. And that's not a new idea, and that's something that we've all heard of ourselves, the sixth sense, but he had a name for it. It was called the sense of the presence of life. And that makes a lot of sense to me, because if you're just sitting somewhere in a cafe or out on the street somewhere, and you think to yourself, I think somebody's watching me. And you turn around, and lo and behold,
they are.
Yeah, you sense the presence of life. You didn't hear them or see them out of the corner of your eye. So he said that there's this sixth sense. And he actually, you know, if that's not outlandish enough, he goes on and says, well, here's a seventh sense. And he says there might be even more. But this whole book is about developing that sixth sense of the sense of presence of life. And he calls it clairvoyance. And when you do that, and you develop that clairvoyance, then what you're doing is developing occult powers.
When I was in school, Clint, I would concentrate on the back of people's heads to see if I could get them to turn around.
Yeah.
Well, you know, sometimes you would stare enough, they would turn around just by the process of time, I guess. I never knew if it worked or not.
I've never met you in person, George, but we'd have to see what kind of personality you have.
Yeah, excellent. Now, the cover of the book has a picture of a crystal ball. Tell me about that. What's behind that story?
The crystal ball is really interesting. You get these, grow up with these images of a crystal gazer, maybe the Wizard of Oz movie. You remember that? And there's the fortune teller. He's out there in his cart. He's got his crystal ball. So we all have this popular image of a gypsy or another kind of crystal gazer. And it's something that we can learn, too. And Atkinson says there's nothing really magical in the crystal ball itself. But if you work with one and you keep working with the same one, you're going to get better with it. If something happens where your practice really helps the technique happen. So it has to be a crystal that's really clear, because we're going to look for pictures in it. And this is something that's been done throughout history around the world. Tribes of people have always done scrying or crystal gazing, where they're going to look into the future or see a distant scene. It's really a different kind of clairvoyance than just in your mind, but you're using this tool. But it does the same thing. It's more like a TV screen or a movie or a handheld personal device these days. And it's just a matter of relaxing and being in the right state of mind for this work to happen. And within a few minutes, if you're following these techniques, you're going to start to see something smoky inside the crystal. And eventually it will make a clear enough image, kind of like a photograph when it's being developed. You remember that, when photographs were happening? And you're going to see something, maybe a face or a scene. And Swami Panchadasi believed that when you see this scene or this face is going to come into your life here in just the space of a few days.
That's something. Now, clairvoyance is an ability, I think, of people to predict the future, predict events that could occur. You use it. I've used it, Clint. Do you have any stories of how it might have affected the lives of somebody?
In history or something that's happening? You know, here's a California story. This is my favorite one. And this is one that we've got in Swami's book here. The Napa Valley, right? We've all had Napa Valley wine, and I love going up there on the weekends, see all the grapes, try some wine. Well, the Napa Valley was really started by Captain George Calvert Yount, and we have Yountville up here, and he was the first white settler and the first vintner. He brought grapes to California. Well, Captain Yount was in Napa in the winter of 1846, and one night he couldn't get to sleep. He kept waking up. He said, I'm having some kind of dream. And he back to sleep, and the dream came to him, and he said, somebody's in trouble. I saw in my dream that there were these people. They were in a mountain pass. I've been in that mountain pass. It's 150 miles away from here. He woke up middle of the night, started telling everyone around him about this. They said, you're crazy, George. What are you talking about? And he said, let's go. Well, the captain says, let's go. You have to go. They went 150 miles up into the Sierra Nevada mountains to the place that Captain Yount recognized in his dream. And you know who they found there? They found the starving remnants of an offshoot of the Donner Party. This was called the Reed Party, and Captain Yount and his friends were able to save them from freezing to death, starving to death, on their way to California. So it's amazing. This dream was a clairvoyant vision that the captain had, and he followed through on it, thank God. And so these people's lives were saved.
That's a great story. That is it. And you know, later on, next hour, when we take calls, we'll take people's calls from their own clairvoyance and experiences, and I bet we get many.
That would be wonderful, yes.
With the Swami, and since his books, when did the first one come out?
The Swami, he was around the 19-teens. That's when his books were coming out, and he just had three.
Way back.
Yeah, this is way back, but this was already well into the career of William Walker Atkinson. Atkinson published over 120 books and pamphlets himself under different names. And he would even, he formed different publishing companies with the same address. And I just have this picture of him sitting in an office in Chicago with all these different letterheads around him. And he's answering letters. And he started the Psychic Club, which you've got to hope there were other members in that, and different research groups. And then he did collaborate eventually with other people. But the Swami's works, the human aura, the astral world, and clairvoyance and occult powers, those came out around the middle of that career, and they were great sellers.
You know, not only were they great sellers, but a lot of books today have basically, I'm not going to say copied what he has written about, but they're pretty darn similar.
Well, you could say that for sure, but I'm not gonna talk to you and tell you that Swami Panchadasi invented the idea of magic or psychic abilities or magical thinking. And you know, this is something that's really great, because everything that's in this book is just a touchstone for so many things to come. And what mental science was doing was saying it's your mind, the power of your mind is really this, you could say, magical thing. And so not only do we have crystal gazing and predictive dreams and clairvoyance and all this, but we've also got the power of positive thinking. And it really, really was encapsulated and clarified in this book, Clairvoyance and Occult Powers. And so two-thirds of the way through the book, we stop talking about crystal gazing and all these things, and the mentalism goes to the boardroom. And Swami Panchadasi and William Walker Atkinson straighten their tie, and they say, look, if you want to get what you want in your life, you follow our directions, we'll give you health, we'll give you prosperity, and we'll give you everything that you're looking for. It's not a new idea. These are the goals of the alchemists hundreds of years before. And at this point, I just thought, oh, my God, the conspiracy theorists had it all wrong. The Masonic hijinks of the rich and powerful in the Bohemian Grove, that's nothing. What these guys are talking about is the corporate retreat of the ascended masters. And so they're right there in the boardroom. And what this did was it really helped people come up with a system, make their lives better, And the prosperity consciousness movement grew out of that. We had books like How to Win Friends and Influence People, Napoleon Hill's book, Think and Grow Rich, and then eventually Seven Habits of Highly Effective People, and then most recently, The Secret, a best-selling book, all based on this law of attraction. If I can think it, I can make it real.
And the Swami was a very staunch believer in that, wasn't he?
Of course, yeah. And you know, this is what gets me about Swami and Atkinson, but at the same time endears them to me, is the whole name, the whole idea of this Swami was something that was made up. You could say it's a lie, but I think it's one of the kindest things, just to make this encouraging elder figure who knows the answers. And what Atkinson did was he created that out of thin air, out of the ether, you might say. He made it real, and then people benefited from it. And so it's just obvious, the fact that the book is still in print, has never gone out of print in the last almost 100 years, and we've got a great new edition now. It's just a testament to how wonderful these ideas are.
We'll talk about the occult and occult powers in just a moment when we come back with Clint Marsh, and one of his other works is called The Mentalist's Handbook. It's pretty similar, isn't it, to the TV show The Mentalist? We'll talk about that as well on Coast to Coast AM when we come right back. Okay, next hour we'll take your phone calls about clairvoyance with Clint Marsh on Coast to Coast AM when we come back. Much more to talk with him about. So, Clint, if we can picture something in our mind, can we make it happen? Can we make it materialize, basically?
I believe so, and I think that's something that has been a idea for a long time around the world. It's possible with mentalism, like I explained in the Mentalist Handbook, and as the Mentalist Handbook was inspired by Swami Panchadasi himself, you're going to find that same system in clairvoyance and occult powers. So yes, I think we can make things real. You don't have to believe in magic. You don't have to believe in fairies or crystal balls or anything. If you can believe something, you want it, you have a strong desire for it, you have to work for it, but you're going to encourage yourself through your powerful thoughts. You know, these thoughts that you have are things, and you can make them real things in your life. And it doesn't have to, you don't have to be rich. You don't have to get a really gaudy car or house. You know, you can provide for your family. You can provide for yourself. You can have the self-confidence to do well in your life. And the system that's laid out in Clairvoyance and Occult Powers, they say you've got to put this desire in your mind. You've got to visualize what will happen, what will be. And then you've got to pretend that it's already there. You've got to believe that it's already there. And if you can concentrate on that visualization that you have the thing you're after, Atkinson and Swami Panchadasi, they say it's like looking up into the night sky and you just see one star. Everything else is black. You're just going to look at this one star and it's shining so bright in that blackness. You've got to focus on it just like that. And if you can do that, yes, you can make what you want real.
Why do some people, when they hear the phrase occult, think that it's evil?
Think that it's evil?
Yeah.
I think we've been trained to believe that. And I think that it's because people are afraid of the unknown. And I think, in a way, that's okay, but don't let it paralyze you. I want to tell you a story about growing up in Iowa. And this is where I first found out about the magic books and the occult and all this. When I was six, my parents bought a house in the woods there in Iowa. We're just moving across town, just outside of a little town there. And they liked this house. They bought it from this widow. And when she sold it to them, she went to the next place, but she left so many things behind in that house, including a fully stocked occult library, an entire bookshelf full of Hammer of the Witches, the Egyptian Book of the Dead, alchemy books, astrology, palm reading. I was 6 years old. I was reading Dick and Jane, or I should have been, but instead what I liked to do was go sneak those books off that shelf and look at those amazing woodcuts of the devil and witches and magicians. And even then, I knew that this was something, this occult material was something that not everybody wanted me to see. And so I kept it secret that I was interested in that. And eventually, you know, you're 6 years old, you can't keep a secret from your parents.
No,
and they found out. I think that they must have tolerated it for a while, but before long, those books disappeared. And for me, that only strengthened and just made really concrete my interest. Oh, I've got to know. I've got to peer behind that veil. But you grow up, the pre-internet age, right? You can't just go on the computer and find other people to talk to about this. The libraries in a small town, it's not really going to have a great library, a great collection. And so this festering inside my head was one of the most amazing and healthy things for me, I think, because it really helped me with my imagination, helped me be an open-minded person. And and here I am, I'm helping bring out these ideas, bring them forward again, and help explain them to a new generation, a new century of people who really can use the occult for good. You can use it for positive things in your life. Not evil. It's just something that we've kind of pushed aside as progress has been made, quote unquote.
Clint, those who use it for evil, and you can, I mean, it does happen. Does it bite them? Does it come back and get them 5 or 10 times worse than what they put out?
I think the jury's out on that. And you see so many terrible things in the world. And even if someone's not a black magician, what I like to say is even this phrase, you just blow air out of your mouth. You say, I don't believe what you're saying. You know, I think that's the most powerful word a black magician can utter, where I've got something that I want to say and I want to put that out there. And this person's just going to ignore it. Just say, no, I don't believe you. you're nothing to me. I'm going to blow you away like a little speck of dust. Now, does that come
back? Like a feather in the wind.
Like a feather in the wind. Does that come back and bite them? We might hope it would. You know, it's a really small slight you might get in your day, but it's an example of someone being very selfish, and you could say evil in a very, very small sense. But, you know, if we wish that on them, are we any better than them?
People like the Swami, did they use these abilities, the good stuff, in their everyday life?
The everyday life, yes. This is exactly why these books were bestsellers. People didn't have to believe in fairies and crystal balls. Like I said, they wanted to better themselves. And then you got to think about the time period when this is happening, especially in the United States. The 20s were pretty good, but Atkinson passed away in 1932, and we were in the thick of a really terrible time at that point. And so it was a real resource, a treasure trove for readers. And then you get these follow-up books that we talked about earlier, Win Friends and Influence People and Think and Grow Rich. And for a lot of people, that's all they had left was their own mind, and they hope to keep it healthy and to use it to better their lives.
How do we know that Atkinson didn't make up the Swami in his own mind?
Well, the Swami is made up in his own mind, and that's what's so wonderful.
So he really wasn't a real person at all?
No. Atkinson went to Chicago on a visit there. He said, oh, I'm going to go to Chicago. I've got to see this World's Columbian Exposition. And, you know, he was interested in law and business. He was quite successful in those fields, and there was a lot to see there for business and industry and so forth. But people were just flocking around these Indian gurus who were visiting from India. These are real people, and they were coming over, sharing ideas. And it's my belief that Atkinson saw this and he said, that's who I want to be. That's the thought that I'm going to put forth. And so he went on to not only write under his own name and sell quite well under his own name, wasn't shy about that, but he also said, I'm going to call myself Swami Panchadasi. I'm going to call myself Baba Bharata. I've got all these different names. And he had an entire magazine filled with contributions from people who weren't even him. But they were from his pen. And it didn't stop with India. He had a French writer, and he had other writers from the United States. These were all figments of his imagination. I think it's wonderful. I don't think that there's anything that's wrong with that. We all run into these books out there and these ideas, and we talk to people and we think, is that for real? But it's all for us to make up our own minds in the end and do the best we can with it, and hopefully do good for others as well as ourselves.
Well, absolutely. In The Sixth Sense, that Atkinson writes about the movie, basically, he was pretty good himself. He, you know, being the author of all these stories, I guess that he would be as clairvoyant as the next guy, wouldn't he?
You say William Walker Atkinson?
Yeah.
Yeah, well, and he has just taken the time and the focus to really work on it and make it his life's work. As a business person, he was phenomenally successful as a business person, and so I think that right there is proof that this technique works. But he just went on to really inspire a lot of people, and I think that that's inspiring them to say, well, you too can bring this into your life, use these powers for yourself, And so I think it's just wonderful what he's done.
Let's talk a little bit more about the powers of clairvoyance. Would you say it's like ESP?
Is it like ESP? Well, I think it's exactly like ESP, because what does ESP stand for? It's extrasensory perception. And when in the first pages of the book, we're learning there are not only five senses, there are six, there are seven, maybe there are more than that. Well, that's perceiving the world through your extra senses. And this was another part of the influence from India. There's more to reality than meets the eye or the ear. And so anything that you can think of as a superpower from a comic book or a fairy tale, well, these can all grow out of clairvoyance or mentalism, as I put in the Mentalist Handbook, a lot of different parallels between different powers and abilities and creatures from myth. So these would include things like thought transference. You could have telepathy, where you are sending your thoughts out just like you would over the phone, but someone could pick those up. Or mind reading, where you are listening for people who are sending thoughts out. There's also astral projection. Your consciousness can leave your physical body, go somewhere else, and return. You didn't go to that place, but you were there as a personality. There's also psychic influence over other people. Like we said, this can be used for good or nefarious purposes. And there's also attracting what we want in life, just bringing these good things, these things that we're hoping for through concentration into our life. So this ESP, clairvoyance, all this, it's a very, very rich kind of practice.
Have you used this in your own life, Clint, and has it helped you out of circumstances?
I believe that I use it every day. And what the best thing that I've gotten out of this work is not any kind of superhero sort of vision experience or any kind of superpower, you might say, but just to wake up in the morning and say, well, it's going to be a good day, and I'm going to give this person over here the benefit of the doubt. I'm going to smile when I go about my day. And just this idea that I can make my day mentally and then carry it out, that's been the most powerful thing for me with this practice. And then I get so many letters and emails from readers, and I love it. I love it when people get in touch with me with their own stories so I can hear how they're using this work to better themselves, or if they have questions, I do my best to write back and always help them to move on to the next thing. Now, one ability that I will say I've had some definite experience with, it's explained in the book Clairvoyance and Occult Powers, it's called psychometry. And that's a word I hadn't seen before, but psychometry is this idea that things, not only are thoughts are things, but things are thoughts, you could say, where you've got some small object, and just by touching it, holding it to your forehead. You remember Carnac on Johnny Carson?
Oh, yeah.
He would hold that to his forehead, and he would tell you what it is. What's in the envelope, Johnny? Well, this book, Clairvoyance and Occult Powers, they got a whole chapter on psychometry. I've done this before where when I'm in the right state of mind, I can pick something up, and it really tells me about its past. And what's really fun is to read about the experiences that the investigative societies of the day were doing, the experiments they're conducting with psychometry. They would hand somebody something, and it was almost like a riddle. There was one woman who was really good at this. They'd always go back to her. They'd say, hold this in your hand. Tell us what you think. It'd be a black rock. And she would hold it up to her forehead. She'd hold it in her hand. She'd get very still, and soon she would say, I'm surrounded by nothing at all. I feel as though I'm a million miles away from the earth.
She probably was.
I'm moving very fast. Oh my, I see the moon, but I don't see the earth. Turns out she was holding part of a meteorite that we can only assume was hurtling past the moon on its way to earth. And they gave her something else. She explained, oh, I'm so large and heavy, I can hardly move. I'm covered in fur. I've got these huge flapping ears, and my mouth is making the most strange shapes and sounds, and there are others like me around. She had a bit of a mastodon tooth. And so there are these great riddles that you're trying to figure out, even from reading these, it's a bit of psychometry. What on earth could she be holding in her hand? And I love that because, you know, we're surrounded by material things in our lives, and everything has a story. Everything is full of thoughts, and it's a product of history. And even if it's not man-made, these things have got some kind of history in it, and it's wonderful to be able to get in touch with that. I think it really helps us feel more human.
Clint, tell me a little bit more about your other work, The Mentalist Handbook. Tell me the entire scope of that.
Great. The Mentalist Handbook, it's got the subtitle, An Explorer's Guide to Astral, Spirit, and Psychic Worlds. It's a book that was put out by Red Wheel Weiser a few years ago. And this is a collection of booklets that I wrote based on my own research and that were illustrated by a wonderful artist named Jeff Hoke in Monterey, California, out here. His own book, The Museum of Lost Wonder, I would encourage everyone to go find too, because it tackles some great big questions of life that we're always wondering about. The Mentalist Handbook was put out as a series of booklets first. We called it the Camelopard. It's the Latin name for a giraffe. We say we're going to elevate our thoughts. So what's the tallest thinker in the land? Well, it's this giraffe with its thoughts way up there in the clouds. And what Jeff and I did was we covered basic topics. What is the world that we can't see? Well, we called it the ether or the etheric plane. And well, how do you get there? You use this technique. It's called mentalism. And it's like what we've been talking about here tonight. You're being still. You're practicing listening to yourself and being in touch with the world around you. And you can go places, and these places include the astral world, where you can do astral projection, move around, find other people, find places that you couldn't go physically. The spirit world, where spirits live, ghosts. It's my belief that people can use these techniques to go to the afterlife before they die. You don't have to wait until after your life to visit heaven or hell, if that's the place that you'd really like to go. And then there's also instruction in these booklets about how to go about your day with a more psychic state of mind and just a sensitivity to the people and the places and things around you and what thoughts are making up those things.
Well, you've done some great work here, Clint. Your website, wonderella.org, is that correct?
That's correct, wonderella.org. Got a long history of my publishing there. I sell books, pamphlets, then one-off ephemera pieces. They're all really fun. I like to have humor in everything I do. I don't pshaw anything, but I think that humor is a great way to get into any topic. So I list it all at wonderella.org, and that includes these books that we've been talking about tonight. I encourage everybody to come. I've got a free catalog that I'll mail you. I'm a firm believer in the postal system, so I'll mail you a catalog. And we can pick up the conversation through the post or on email if they like.
Super, Clinton. We're going to come back with final phone calls with you on Coast to Coast AM, where some people think maybe you may be Swami Panchadashi. We'll be back.